Hey there, boys, girls, and flying squirrels. My name's Joe Keyport, and you're listening to the Ear Coffee Podcast. This week, I talked to Sam Goebel of Caldwell. This interview was a fun one for me just because Sam and I were classmates at UNW where we studied recording and studio production. It was cool to reconnect and talk aggressive music. Caldwell is Sam's brand new solo project, and he released his debut EP titled I Don't Know Myself As Well As I Once Thought on April 24th. The EP is this inward look through the lens of post-hardcore. Throughout the interview, Sam and I talk his history with music, the jump to being a solo artist, and a part two to his debut EP. It's Sam Goebel on the Ear Coffee Podcast. Well, Sam, how's it going?
It's going really well, man.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, with all this, all the snafu that
makes things a little difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But
you've been doing, have you been doing anything entertaining to pass the time?
I mean, gosh. Not really.
Not really? Just kind of everything, a lot of Netflix and stuff like that, playing guitar.
Yeah, exactly. Like the classic.
Yeah.
Like, destroyed Tiger King when when that was like the big phenomenon.
Yeah. Gotcha. I haven't watched it yet, so I haven't gotten to that point. So
it's like, oh man, I don't. It's hard to like say like, oh yeah, you should definitely go watch it. But. Man, there is something about it that just like you just can't stop once you start watching it. But
gotcha, kind of got that reality TV show of you're already there, so why don't watch the train wreck and unfold?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I saw there was like a local radio station was trying to get Carol Baskins on their morning show, and they were just like getting. I guess she like sent an angry message in response because they wouldn't leave her alone. Which was kind of funny, but
yeah. And then did you hear about like, I think there were like a couple of YouTubers that like pretended to be Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Or something like their production crew and like got her to
do like an interview. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. I haven't like watched it or anything.
Neither
like
have
that,
I.
But it sounds wild.
Well, Sam, this is one of the few unique instances where we can, and by we I mean Ear Coffee, can talk to a former classmate, because there's been a couple, but it's rare, and especially a classmate who makes heavy music, because a lot of the times it's like the folky singer-songwritery. We went to the University of Northwestern St. Paul and actually happened to be recording art students together, which you ended up using your degree and I ended up switching to radio.
But Yeah.
That's neither here nor there. So let's just talk about how you first started getting into music. Were you a fan first before a musician, or were you a musician who became a music fan?
Well, I'd say, that's a good question.
I thought about that because I was like, I liked music before I started playing guitar, but it wasn't until like I started playing guitar that I was like, oh, I love music.
Yeah. And I wonder if it was maybe like some kind of, maybe like they went at the same time.
Yeah.
The thing, you know, cause I took guitar lessons in like elementary school and that stuff, like doing like a 2-3-4 chord kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that was about like the extent of it. And then like, as I became like a music fan or whatever, like fell in love with music, then the inspiration to like, oh, like I actually like want to play instruments and like get good at this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe that kind of like happened at the same time almost, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Was there what was the band that really set it off then?
I attribute it to old school Three Days Grace.
Okay.
Like, yeah, just that like real nasty.
Yeah. Did you play any other instruments growing up, or was it just primarily guitar?
It was like first and foremost guitar. Like I knew enough to like kind of mess around on piano and drums and that kind of stuff. And, that's kind of like what I tell most people is that like, I know enough to like kind of work my way through something, but I like actually play guitar.
You can. So So was that when you also got into like recording? Because obviously you went to Northwestern for recording arts. Was that kind of, did you grow into that as well? Or was something recording yourself or recording music, I should say, something that came with the playing guitar and the loving music?
Yeah, I mean, like, a few buddies of mine and I, like, back in, like, high school, like, we tried to record ourselves, and it was horrible. I don't know where those recordings are, and truthfully, I'm pretty thankful about that. So, and I think that's kind of funny, too, that you mentioned, like, flopping from recording arts to radio at Northwestern, because I actually did the opposite.
Did you really?
I started wanting to do radio.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then I did the, what was it called now? The, like, was it 96 hours of...
The 80 whatever hours of Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever that was. I went on air one time there and was just like, this is horrible. Like, I'm not doing this anymore.
That's funny. That's really good. Because I ended up not wanting to do radio at all, and then my last semester I probably did like 15 hours straight in the booth during that like thing. It was a nightmare. It was awful. It was so bad, but like it was just like, let's see what happens.
But yeah, well, and I remember you being pretty like pretty involved in like the workshop and all that kind of stuff too. But
yeah, I mean, when it was your best opportunity to actually produce content, kind of throw yourself into it. So,
right.
Yeah. So, were you playing in bands in high school too?
I mean, sort of.
Sort of?
Like, So, like, I grew up in a town of, like, 3,000-ish people. And that, so, like, there were maybe, at best, like, 500-ish kids in, like, my like my high school. So like I was pretty much the only one that like really, really liked playing. Like I had a couple guys that I would like jam with and that stuff, but it was never anything where we were like, oh yeah, like this is like a thing that we want to do.
It was like you had enough buddies to get together, like maybe do the school talent show like once a year, if that kind of a thing, or
exactly.
Yeah.
And even then, like, eventually it just kind of, like, just kind of drifted off into the ether. And so then I just was like, whatever, I'll just do my own thing.
So post-college, what were you doing? Were you in music, doing music stuff post-Northwestern? Doc's going off.
I was, I certainly, like, was, like, working to get into that realm. You know, like after maybe a few months or so of like graduating, I moved down to Nashville for a little bit, hopped on like a couple weekend runs and like eventually a gig that was more, like kind of like AV service type.
Okay.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually just like all the right things happened that like led me to come home and
Cause you also play guitar in the band Prevailing Providence, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Cause I ran into Nathan. I was playing bass for at a church and I just ran into Nathan. He's like, oh, I play in this metal band. Cause I was just taken back by someone with like a decent rig. And then he's like, yeah, I do this. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, dang dude. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, I'm like, I feel like the rig that I've built up is like, it's pretty decent in that stuff. But like, yeah, Nathan's always getting like super killer stuff.
Yeah. So how did you get connected with that band and those guys?
So that one was primarily through Nathan. Like during college, I would like work at the same summer camp that he did.
What was that one? Is that
Covenant Pines?
There you go. Because Luke Morris, one of our mutuals, also worked there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I first met Nathan through there because like the first like kind of iteration of Prevailing Providence was like a lot of Bethel guys.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then through Nathan, I got to meet like some of the others and started off playing bass for them.
Okay.
Then moved to Nashville. So I stopped playing with them then. And then when I moved back, they were like, hey, we have a spot for a rhythm guitar if you want to do that.
Gotcha.
Yes.
That's funny. So you've been playing in the band. When did you start playing bass for them?
So, and I mean, like, I barely count the time that I like played bass for them because it was like so
short.
Yeah, it was like for a few months. Like, I didn't even like play a show.
Okay.
Kind of thing. It was just like helping them write, but that was like that would have been. What is it? Early 2016, maybe?
Okay. So then did you write on their... Because they've put out a couple of releases, haven't they? So you were you on the most recent record they put out last year? Or the band put out last year? Okay. And were you on the one before that, too?
Yeah. Okay. I recorded the bass parts for the EP before.
Okay.
Yeah, before like last year's.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, we don't need to talk about that, Ben, because obviously we're here to talk about your solo EP, because you made a debut as the band or the artist Caldwell.
Right.
So what was the push to do solo music?
I suppose like the big thing was kind of just like having another creative outlet. Because like when we were writing stuff for like the Prevailing Providence album, I was just like putting down as many ideas as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, every once in a while, like there were just a few songs that I was like, like these are like these are really good, but like they're not quite like they're not that like metalcore realm. They're kind of like something else. And so I was like, well, I'll just like put these off to the side and like slowly work on them, and just kind of like slowly evolved into like its own sound.
Okay.
And so then I was like, well, like, why not just kind of put them together and just kind of put them out into the world to see. So it's very much a thing that's like in its infancy.
Yeah.
But
yeah. How long have you been sitting on these songs since you said you've been slowly working and writing on them since have you been sitting on them since that like 2017, 2016 or?
Would have been, yeah, I think it was like maybe the first idea maybe came around like late 2017, 2018, somewhere around there.
Okay. So they're not like crazy old, but they're definitely, you've had them for a bit.
Right. Exactly.
And why, I was wondering, I always think of when I think of like solo projects, especially of people in like heavy bands, usually they're the singer songwriter kind of the more folky acoustic guitar, maybe a pop punk influence or something. Why the post hardcore, the aggressive shouty when it's, cause did you record all the instruments and stuff or was it with other people as well?
Yeah. So I recorded everything.
Oh, wow.
Kind of going for like, was it like, have you heard of the band Beartooth before?
Yes. Yeah.
So kind of like that, like a Caleb Shomo, like doing
everything. Yeah. Everything,
except he actually plays drums. I didn't play drums, but.
Okay. So do you like program them with a drum machine or?
Yeah. Yeah. Which like, I know some people will say that like, oh, that's cheating, but
yeah.
Nope. Whatever, it sounds awesome. So
yeah, and it's a tool to use when you don't have or you're, when you're trying to do something that you don't maybe have the access to at the time either.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so just like it was like both that like kind of like just like a lot of like my other like influences outside of like the metalcore realm are like pretty well anchored in that like punk emo hardcore realm.
Yeah.
That was just something. And then that and just like that's just what my scream leans towards. And like, that was like something I recently learned how to do and I just really wanted to do it.
Yeah. So. Fair. I was wondering how long you've been able to do the screams or the dirty vocals. Cause I mean, Northwestern, anytime I meet a Northwestern, like musician, I usually just associate them with like pretty worship band vocals, which is just very
right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was definitely something that like it was like just this past year that I first like really kind of like locked into it. Because like I would do backing vocals and all that kind of stuff, like the clean singing,
yeah,
sort of stuff all the time. So that was nothing like new.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just like it was just always something that I like really wanted to learn how to pick up.
Gotcha.
And so like I would just like try and
mm-hmm.
try and work it out like in my car or something mm-hmm. like that, like on the way to work or something. And then one day it just clicked, and it was
gotcha.
Just like, oh, this is so cool.
Nice. So how have you been playing? Because you've been playing these songs at shows, which is funny. I was looking through the Caldwell Facebook page, and there were a couple of gig posters. Like I almost went to that show, and then something came up last second. Like because you were on a bill with like Careful Gaze and
yeah.
some other, and so there was like a lot of those. Like the name when Luke Morris messaged me, just like, "Hey, I want to suggest a friend for your podcast." I was like, "This name is really familiar, and I've heard like a song, but I for some reason didn't associate it with you because I like saw the name and I remember. I think it was when not Wanderlust, but the first, technically the second song, "The Walls Around Me," was posted.
Yeah, yeah.
I was sitting in my living room with Wes, who also does Ear Coffee, and I was like, "Huh, this is like a Northwestern person. Let's put it on." And we both went, "Oh, this is new." But you've been performing these songs out solo. How long have you been performing these songs live then?
So that was just like this past year, like the, or like by this past year, I mean like,
yeah, like
2020.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the one with like Careful Gaze mm-hmm. and that was like the very first show.
Oh,
like I did with these songs. Yeah, just like,
yeah,
just wanting to, cause like the dream obviously is at some point, like I'd be able to get a crew of,
yeah,
people. Of guys with me too. And like play them full mm-hmm. band. But yeah, that one, cause I've been friends with the guy who put it on, Malcolm, with, Here for Life.
Okay.
I've been friends with him for a little while now. And so, like, when they announced that it was just, like, an all-acoustic show, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I can make my songs acoustic.
Yeah.
And so then just, like, asked them, like, hey, mind if I, like, hop on the mm-hmm. on the bill? And I was like, yeah, that's totally fine.
What was it like playing that first set as a solo musician? Because I'm assuming up until that point you had primarily played with other people?
Yeah, so, like, I've done a couple like smaller coffee shop type shows and that stuff too. So I was like, and that's a lot of like what that first show was.
Gotcha.
With, excuse me. Yeah. Like, I don't know if have you like been to Anahata or like seen that room?
I have not. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like if you've been to like any, local coffee shop in the Twin Cities, like chances are like you get the vibe.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that was kind of nice to have. Like it was just a very familiar, comfortable
mm-hmm.
atmosphere. Like it was just the real, real like living room look
yeah.
to it. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So it was, yeah. What was it like playing those songs out live then for the first time?
I'd say about what you'd expect. Yeah,
okay.
Like, yeah, like the handful of friends that had heard like the singles and that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I had a couple people come out and they were really into it. And like some people that were there a little early just to hang out. Like
mm-hmm.
I was more so nervous, like playing the songs for them.
Okay.
Cause it is kind of weird. And like that bill was pretty like varying
okay.
in like the full band like sound that they all have. Cause it was myself, Oftener,
yep.
Little Tigers, and then Careful Gaze.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Which I mean, like even there, it's like, Careful Gaze, and like my stuff is like kind of similar, I suppose, in that like hardcore realm. Little Tigers is like more, I want to say they're like either like a rock and roll or like pop punk. If I get that wrong, I'm very sorry. And then, and then Oftener with like their dream pop thing that they got going on. Yeah.
Okay.
Like a very eclectic group, which I think kind of like helped ease nerves, like looking back on things, you know, in a weird way.
Yeah, you're not trying to like, you weren't trying to fit in with an already like established sound. It's kind of nice when there's like everybody's different enough that it's all, you're almost doing your own individual showcase.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like I could just go do my own thing for 20, 25 minutes and then hang out for the rest of the night.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of what the EP is about, which I forgot to mention the name. The EP is titled I Don't Know Myself As Well As I Once Thought, Part 1. Does that mean there's going to be a part 2?
Yes.
You were going
to? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, so yeah, like the first idea is I wanted a full album that was just the I Don't Know Myself As Well As I Once Thought. And then like, as I thought about it a little more with this just being like really starting to get off the ground, I felt like, well, maybe it'd be better to just kind of like break them up.
Okay.
And that, and just kind of like, as I like start to build up traction and momentum to just kind of have like a more steady stream of music.
Yeah.
As compared to just like, here's all the songs I have.
Yeah.
I'll see you in like 2 years when you've already forgotten about me kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, it's what the age of music, the way it is, the idea of trying to do constant music, which is like singles and EPs as opposed to maybe doing the big full length statements.
Exactly. Which I'd love to do that at some point, but it just like logistically, like the more I thought about it, it just like didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is a long way to say that, like, yes, I do have a part two planned.
Gotcha. On social media, you described the EP, and I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit because it's a very long quote. You call it a collection of songs about a lot of things, and then you list all those things. But more so than anything else, I think it's about growth, end quote. So talk to me about kind of the EP and the themes on it and about the statement like that you made when you released it.
Yeah. So, like, essentially the songs are all kind of like, kind of hyper dramatized, like things that I've kind of like experienced.
Okay.
And that, you know, and just like, things of like, of just like wanting to fit in and, the classic, like, heartbreak, breakup, like type songs and that kind of thing. And just like in like our current age with like social media and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just like constantly like comparing yourself to other people and that kind of thing. So I wanted to like kind of tell those stories, but still to kind of like drive home this aspect of just like that like this is like what I've experienced, but it's not who I am and it's not like where I'm going. Like I'm just trying to be to just constantly like improve myself and and that's kind of like where the title of it came from.
Okay.
As well, like all of these things that I thought I knew about myself like back then may be true at that time, but it's not true now, I suppose, if it all makes sense.
Yeah, most definitely. Because that makes a lot of sense, because when I listened to these songs, I listened to it, I was listening to it a bunch today, and just thinking about how a lot of the songs seem like they're a lot of like messages to either a past person or... I don't know if you like thinking of like songs like Lullaby and Insomniac, like a lullaby almost plays like it's a letter written to, I don't know if it's written to yourself or if it's written to somebody else. And I mean, the second track, which feels like the first track just because you have a little prelude before it, which that first line really builds that that hyper dramatize that emotional rawness that you really are pushing home on this record, especially with the way you deliver that first line, because it feels like it's a clenched jaw that you're just kind of like punching out of something, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's definitely like, I think all of those points are pretty valid. Like, yeah, like with Lullaby being like, you know, kind of either, you know, depending on how you like look at it, like it could very well be just like current me writing past me, like you know, this letter or whatever, or like vice versa. And then yeah, like I think The Walls Around Me is like really big on like the kind of that like thematic of like just kind of like destruction of like the
yeah,
these like structures or whatever. Because yeah, that was like one of the big things I wanted to hit home on that song, is just like that there are all of these different barriers that like people can construct to kind of like to like maybe not necessarily like put them in a box, but like to just kind of like to fit in with like the rest of the world. And so it kind of like holds in like the person that they actually are. And yeah, just like I think once I feel like it would get to be like inevitable point where like you just can't hold in like the person that you are anymore.
Yeah.
Then it's just kind of like a matter of just like pulling those barriers down and that kind of thing, you know?
No, most definitely. You released The Walls Around Me and Wanderlust, which are the first, well, technically it's the second and fifth track, if I'm misremembering things, excuse me. Yep, sixth track. Second and sixth track as singles. Was there a reason why you chose to do the like the first full song and the last full song as opposed to doing any other? Because I thought that was interesting when I was like, when I realized that, I was like, that's essentially the open and close of the record, excluding obviously that minute prelude. Were you thinking about trying to give like the bookends before hearing the middle, or what was the reason for that?
Not really. So, it just kind of worked out with like how part one and two broke up.
Okay.
Like I always knew that I wanted like the, yeah, like the intro track or whatever. I wanted that to bleed into The Walls Around Me for sure. Like that was how I was going to open up everything no matter what.
Yeah.
Just cause like, it's just such a high energy song that it was like, it would be stupid for it to just like, to be like halfway through the record or something like that. So yeah, when it was all like one conceptual idea, Wanderlust was like more in like the middle.
Okay.
And so yeah, when I decided I wanted to like break it up into two pieces, it really kind of more came down to Wanderlust's outro. That it was just like, it's just, you know, it just like escalates and just goes on forever and ever and ever. Like, you know, it was just kind of like, it just felt like such a epic conclusion to like this piece of it.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and I think like the kind of ambiguity that like the lyrics leave to like kind of like, I hope it'll like bleed well into, yeah, into the next portion, but
since you're talking about it being that kind of transition track into the next portion, do you have the part two already planned out and written? You're just waiting to record, or what's the kind of, how is that going to fit into what we have here with part one?
So like I have a pretty good roadmap as far as kind of like what I want to cover and like what most of like the instrumentals will look like, and it'll be kind of like a same structure of like I'm hoping to add in another track to like introduce.
Yeah.
Kind of like what the, I'll call it prologue, because saying the whole title is
it's a mouthful. Like, yeah.
I fully acknowledge that, but
it's kind of like, do you listen to the, have you ever listened to the band Beach Slang?
I don't think so.
They're like,
no.
They're a Philly, like pop punk, early kind of like indie rock kind of thing, and James Alex, the person who runs that band, is very much likes to write these long mouthful like book titles as well.
Or like like the classic ones like Panic at the Disco or Fall Out Boy, like their old stuff that had stupid long titles. It's like, I can't tell you what the name of this song is. I can tell you how it goes.
Yeah, but exactly.
But yeah, so I'm hoping to have something like that to kind of to kind of bleed into the first song on part two.
Okay, you're gonna do like a so I play trombone in a band right now, and last year they put a bunch of EPs out, and like the last note of the previous EP was always the first note of the next EP. So if you listen to them all congruently, there would be almost be a homogenous sound to it in one way or another. So you're trying to do something like that as well, just like the fade in.
Maybe not quite but
fair.
But yeah, kind of that, like, kind of that idea that you can listen to part one and two like one after another, and it would like, and it would make sense.
Yeah.
You know?
So where's that roadmap taking you? I know obviously that's in the future, and but I just kind of want to, I'm interested to see what that roadmap you have planned out, how that's going to go.
Yeah. So that one's kind of like, it's a lot more kind of, that one's a lot more on like kind of the growth aspect that kind of like you touch on with part one, like, yeah, like I kind of see it like as two acts or whatever, where we have part one that kind of like sets up these stories, and then part two is kind of like wrapping things up. So like there's one that's about closure, about just like, you know, about just like thanking people in my life and that kind of thing. And like the very last song, I'm hoping to just kind of like thematically tie up the whole thing. And,
okay. Gotcha. I know we talked about it a little previously, with the whole solo thing, playing these songs solo. Have you had to do anything special or like think about things in a different way? Because obviously it's shouty electric guitar music and you're playing these now in coffee shops, which I don't feel like people would appreciate getting screamed at while they're sipping on whatever they're sipping on. So have you done anything special to make sure they translate? Because they obviously, you still want that feeling and that emotion to be conveyed, but just in a different package.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that was definitely on the forefront when I was like putting stuff together for when I like first showcased them. Cause I agree. No one wants to hear a dude with an acoustic guitar scream at him for 20 minutes. So yeah, like I intentionally pick the ones that like best translate to that, that kind of environment of stuff that like, you know, like when you sing the screamy parts, like that, it makes sense. Like you would be able to listen to it and be like, oh yeah, I can definitely see, you know, the like compositional theme or whatever you want to call it.
Like the weight is still there. Obviously the fact that it's now on an acoustic doesn't take away from the grit that comes with that style of music.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It just maybe like, rather than like a post-hardcore realm, it like morphs into more of like an emo, softer, like tiny moving parts kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We're kind of coming to the end of the interview here. So this is a big question, not because it's incredibly intense, but it's just the way the world is working currently. What does the rest of 2020 look like for you? Do you have any exciting plans coming up? With this stuff, obviously, you're probably going to want to start playing shows once you can. Do you have any like live streams coming up or stuff like that?
Nothing planned right now. I did do a live stream for when the EP first came out.
Yeah.
If anyone cares to to watch that, like, can go to like Facebook or YouTube, see that. But yeah, I don't know. I was like thinking of like it'd be kind of cool to like do a live thing of like as I'm working on like instrumentals for like new stuff or something like that. Like that would be cool, but yeah, otherwise like I don't know. There's not really not really much to do, and it's like hard to plan for stuff, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, especially because I've talked to bands who are like, yeah, we're all about doing just random like live stream events. One of them was just reading fan fiction one day. That was bizarre. And then there's some bands that are like, we don't really want to do live streams because we want people to engage with our music live in person and not over a Zoom call. So,
So yeah, exactly. Like there are just so many different ways to go about it, and it's like, yeah, on like one hand, it'd like be cool to come up with something that would be like cool and interactive, like and kind of like be like the next best thing, but at the same time, like I think kind of like what you were saying with the band that was talking about, not really wanting to just because everybody's doing it, so it's kind of like why continue to oversaturate things, you know?
Exactly. Well, Sam, thank you so much for taking the time to sit here and talk with me on this Thursday evening.
Yeah, dude, for sure. This was a blast.
The Ear Coffee Podcast is a companion to the blog of the same name. If you like this episode, please leave us a rate and review so we can stand out among the other music podcasts. You can follow us at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @EarCoffee. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.